The Big Book does not use the word forgiveness in step four or anywhere in this. The word forgiveness is used at one point when talking about what you are looking for from your family and making amends to them. But forgiveness has two, it has many meanings, but it has two major meanings. And one of them is, I'm going to forgive you so you no longer live rent-free in my mind. I'm not going to let you kill me. And then there's forgiveness that means you owe me no debt. You know, I'm erasing your debt to me. And those are two different meanings. I understand when people say, I must forgive this person. From their perspective, they almost always use that word in the first sense. You're not going to kill me. I'm taking you out of my mind. I am not going to let you continue to be a resentment that I'm going to fester over, I'm going to eat over. There are people in my lives, and Hitler was certainly one of them, not to me, but who owe debts that they have never repaid. I have a friend who owes me a debt that has never been repaid. I'm not going to say to him, you don't owe me that money. I'm not going to say to Hitler, oh, poor guy, you were just a sick person, and you aren't responsible for the deaths of millions of people, right? That's the kind of forgiveness. First of all, I don't have a right to forgive Hitler because he didn't affect me personally. And there's a wonderful rabbi who's written an essay on forgiveness. And it talks about how in Judaic law, there is the concept that you cannot forgive anyone for harm done to someone else. So no one has, and he says the murderer, therefore, can never be forgiven, not even by God. But the only hope of a person who has done harm, who can't be forgiven, is that that person has become a different person before he dies. And I accept that concept, that there's some people who show so much remorse, who have examined their lives, just as we have that ability to do in this program. We have the ability in this program to make up for the harms that we've done to others. They have every right. If my friend who owes me money said, here's $5, I can't pay you the rest until, you know, over a period of time, I would say, you owe me nothing. I would so willingly forgive him the debt. It's the fact that he hasn't even talked about it that I cannot say to him in my mind, you don't owe me this money, right? So what do we do if it's really deep? And now, I'm going to give you a number of different examples. I have friends in this program who have experienced sexual and physical abuse that were horrible. It's all horrible, but it was horrible. Truly traumatizing. By people who showed no remorse. And they used page 552 of the Big Book, which I'll come to in a moment. I had Hitler, I used page 552. I had a lawyer who betrayed my trust in him. He was very popular, everyone loved him, and he was an unethical bastard who betrayed the trust I had in his being an ethical person. I couldn't, and I had a case with him at the moment I was doing my step 4 and 5. And he was beating the hell out of me because 90% of my mind was, you bastard, you had nothing to do with the case. I had lost my mind on the case, and he was beating me because I just wanted revenge. And what I did and what my friends did was I turned to page 552 of the Big Book. It's a very interesting story. The woman who wrote it, who is variously known, she's Wynn, W-Y-N-N-E, she's known under two different letters. But she wrote this story, and it is about her having been sober for, 20 years, and still having a resentment against her mother. And knowing that if she didn't get rid of that resentment, she would go back to drinking, page 552 of the Big Book. And she came across an article written by a clergyman in which the word resentment was there. I heard a talk by her, and she gives credit to Norman Vincent Peale, who wrote Power of Positive Thinking, written in his magazine, which is Guideposts. And this is what she says he said, in effect. If you have a resentment you want to be free of, if you will pray for the person or the thing that you resent, you will be free. If you will ask in prayer for everything you want for yourself to be given to them, you will be free. Ask for their health, their prosperity, their happiness, and you will be free. Even when you don't really want it for them and your prayers are only words and you don't mean it, go ahead and do it anyway. Do it every day for 2 weeks and you will find that you've come to mean it and to want it for them. And you will realize that where you used to feel bitterness and resentment and hatred, you now feel compassion, understanding, and love. It didn't quite go that way for me. I'll tell you how I worked it. No, I mean, I ended up getting rid of the resentment. I first of all had to figure out, what is it that I want out of my life? That's a really key. He talks about prosperity, happiness, and health. I want to be useful. I want to be serene. I want to be able to love and to be loved. When it comes down to it, my life, the length of my life, is less important than how I live it. And those are the three things that I'd really like to have. Serene, useful, love, and to be loved. And, I mean, this goes sort of differently from Norman Desappeal, who was a lot about prosperity thinking and all that. And when I prayed then for this lawyer who betrayed me, or for Hitler in retrospect, or when my friends prayed for the person who had sexually traumatized them, or when I told some of you that the last 9 years of my life, I've been listening to claims from people who were sexually and physically abused at residential schools run by the government for Native Americans. And I have been introduced to a world of evil that I couldn't even imagine. And I have a very good imagination. And they were on my list. All these perpetrators were on my list. So when I prayed for them, I prayed for Hitler, I prayed for this lawyer who had betrayed me, I said, I want so-and-so to be serene, to be able to love and to be loved, and to be useful. And it didn't take more than one prayer to realize that the people I was praying for had none of that. Not they weren't serene people. They were certainly not useful. They were quite the opposite. They were harmful. And they had no idea of what love meant. And then I began to feel, had nothing to do with what they did. What they did was still not something, they owed a debt and they hadn't paid it. But they were empty shells of what a human being can be. And that's what my friends who dealt with their traumatizers came to, the same conclusion. They're empty shells. And it's very hard to imagine, but we've all come to sort of that understanding how sad for them. What they did was awful, but every time they did something bad, they nailed another, they put another nail into their own coffin of pathetic, sad, inhuman existence. And it worked. I can only tell you that it worked. It doesn't mean that all of you will find it worked. Many of you may need to go to therapy for some things that have happened to you. I'm not casting any or making any suggestions, but this has worked for people whose traumas far exceeds anything I could imagine. And this whole sense, so it's not forgiveness. It's this feeling of pity. It's not even like you're an animal, because animals don't do harm for joy. Oh, most animals don't. Anyway, it's beyond animal. They do harm and they don't even know they do harm. They have the moral abilities of I don't even know what, of an insect. They're just pathetic examples of humanity. And that got rid of this feeling of anger and resentment that I had. Does that make sense? So it was very powerful. And it certainly has been powerful for the people I've sponsored who have experienced these traumas, which were so awful. Okay. That's for people who've harmed you or others that are on your resentment list. And then the big book goes on. It gives you a guide for when a person next offended. You say when a person next offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man, how can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry, thy will be done. That's what's called the ongoing resentment prayer. But the resentment prayer is, God, so-and-so is a sick person, please help me show that person the same tolerance, pity, and patience. I would cheerfully grant a sick friend.
What's the differentiation? Which one is which?
The resentment prayer that you say for people whom you resent on your list is, we ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. The next prayer is when a person offended, and it used to say next offended, we said, this is a sick man, how can I be helpful? God said, so this is your guide for dealing with future problems. Someone's bothering you, this is a sick man, how can I be helpful? God save me from the end. The big book goes on, page 67, right in the middle. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, and the instructions are that you take this form and you bend it over so that you've obscured columns 2 and 3, which are the harms of the why they're on the list and how it affects you. And you're faced with column 1 and 4 together. And as a matter of fact, on this form, you'll see 2 dotted lines, and that's where you can fold them. It doesn't show very well, but that's what the dotted lines are there for. I'm hoping to take them out because they're much too confusing. The big book says, we resolutely looked for our mistakes. Where had we been? Selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Those are your 4 character defects. So, what do these words mean? Well, now remember, selfish has been redefined by the big book in our discussion of preliminary to step 3, as wanting my way regardless of the reasons, regardless of the motivations. So although it would be blasphemy for me to say in the dictionary definition, I am selfish in not wanting the Holocaust to have existed. It's blasphemy to say that. It's just, the Holocaust shouldn't have existed. It is not blasphemy if I use the word selfish to mean I want the past not to have occurred. Okay, that's the generic meaning of the word selfish. Now, for some people, it's so hard to get over the word selfish because they know what it means, they know what the dictionary says. Use the word self-willed if you want, instead of selfish. There's no magic to the word selfish. It's just that that's what they mean by the word selfish. I think I've proved that by the analysis I did this morning. But if you don't like the word selfish, if that just sticks in your craw because it can't be selfish to want not to have been, you know, sexually abused when you were 6 years old, and it's not selfish from the dictionary point of view not to want that. I mean, that's, everyone has the right not to have had that happen to him or her. If you don't like the word selfish, if it really sticks in your craw, don't use the word selfish. Use the word self-will or wanting to play God or something like that. Okay, so that's selfish. Now, as you go through your list of selfish and you fill that out, you will find that you put down sometimes quite virtuous things. I don't want people to suffer in this world. And then you find as you write that down that you might also be putting down, I want to be able to sleep at night so I don't think about people suffering in the world, which is more on the other side of selfish, you know? There were times when I can't remember. Oh, well, with this lawyer betrayed me and I was losing this case. I didn't know about this 4th column. I did that in step 5, but I would have put something like, selfish or self-willed, I want this lawyer to apologize to me on his bended knees. Right? I did. I want this lawyer to make up for the harm that he did. Right? Now, where that's 2 different things. I want to win the case. You know, these are all feelings that I had. Some of them selfish in the big book way of just wanting my way. And some of them, I want the glory. I want to get this guy to fess up. So for Hitler, for instance, under selfish, I want the Holocaust not to have occurred. And that's it. That's what I had under selfish. Now, it's not selfish in the dictionary definition, but it is selfish in the big book definition. Dishonest. Dishonesty is 3 kinds of dishonesty. I've already talked about that. There is the lying, cheating, and stealing that the big book mostly describes. There is not telling the truth when the truth should be told. True for so many of us. Not standing up for ourselves, not standing up for other people, not talking about things that we think are shameful that other people did to us, like sexual trauma. And there's so many people I've met who had things done to them when they were 6 years old are embarrassed and shamed by what an adult did to a 6-year-old child. And I say that's horrible. that they should even feel the slightest twinge of shame or guilt. But that's what they've lived with for 50 years. Their ability to talk and the work I did was to listen to them and validate them and ultimately, I believe 99% of them. In some way, shape, or form, I hope that I contributed. If they've been able to take it out of the closet and sort of leave some of it with me or with... There are 100 other adjudicators hearing the same cases, same kind of cases. But the shame and guilt meant that they would not talk about it. And just as an example, when they got angry or when their spouses couldn't... when they didn't want any sex because of what had happened to them, they couldn't say why. When their kids suffered the kind of anger that was being bottled up inside them, and sometimes they were physically abusive, sometimes they were sexually abusive to younger children as they got older, they could not explain what had happened to them. So they couldn't tell the truth about what had happened to them, and that sort of put them in a huge box where they lived internally with it. It came out in horrible ways in terms of the treatment of their loved ones, and the person who did it never suffered any consequences or was never able to take responsibility for what he or she did. So the dishonesty of not telling the truth when the truth should be told in relationships, in all kinds of things, is a huge issue. With certainly my experience has been with us in a way. And the other kind of dishonesty is lying to ourselves about reality. So for the Holocaust, for instance, I put down, I want something not to have occurred before I was born. I'm lying to myself about reality. What a stupid fantasy life I'm living, where I can imagine something that I wasn't even alive to experience. And so lying to myself about reality is a huge issue. And again, it's a dishonesty. I had a friend in OA whose mother was very sick and who treated her entire life with hatred. Very, very sad. So selfish. What was her selfishness? She wanted a mother like June Cleaver or like Father Knows Best or like, you know, she wanted a good fantasy mother that she would see on television. Who can blame her for wanting that? She wanted her mother to love her. You know, this is selfish in not the dictionary definition. This is self-will. This is how you want reality to go, and it didn't go that way. Dishonest, looking at her mother's background and how her mother grew up, her mother did the best she could, as bad as it was. And she finally acknowledged the reality. Her mother was incapable of being any better than she was, given who she was, how sick she was, and how she grew up. And you know, the people I've interviewed for this work that I've been doing for the last 9 years, when they talk about how they treated their children and how they had no idea how to treat children, because the way they were treated was they were living in these residences and they were not being treated with any love. They were being treated horribly, both sexually and physically. So how could they raise children? And so, you know, it just goes on. It's the gift that gives on giving, right? The gift that keeps on giving. So that's dishonest, and I think it's really important for us not to think just about lying, cheating, or stealing, but not telling the truth when the truth should be told, and lying to yourself about reality. Because we're pretty passive people. Self-seeking, that's a tough word. It's helped by the fact that it's picked up later on in the sex conduct form as inconsiderate. I think self-seeking is, it's all about me. It's all about how these people have affected me. It's not about them, it's about me. You know, two psychiatrists meet on the street and one says, "You're fine, how am I?" But it's not about that. It's one of my favorite jokes, but it doesn't always get a laugh. But it's just sort of like, this is what he did to me. This is how I feel. This is how I'm experienced. It's all thinking about yourself. It's self-seeking. It's also finding the definition of who you are in other people, seeking yourself in other people. You know, how am I is really it. Am I a nice person? Well, if you love me, I must be worthy of being loved. Although in my case, it was always, if you love me, you must be stupid. These feelings are that's what self-seeking is. It's a general word. You look in the dictionary, self-seeking means selfish and self selfish means self-seeking. And frightened is just a bunch of fear. So what are the fears we often have? Often our fears are pretty clear. It'll happen again. I'll never be able to get out of this. I'm never going to be loved. You know, these are the fears that you get. Now, this is really deep. I'll give you an example. Gossiping is often listed as a character defect. I list that as an action. It's not a character defect. It's something I do as a result of my character defects. Why did I gossip? Selfish. I wanted people to think more of me than of someone else. Dishonest. I didn't tell the whole truth about that person. I only told certain parts about that. And sometimes I exaggerated them. Self-seeking. I wanted to look better than someone else. Fearful. He'll find out. And I find that to be so much deeper than just listing gossiping as a defect or listing jealousy. Jealousy? Selfish? I want what that person has. Dishonest? I haven't got what that person has. Self-seeking? I deserve what that person has. Fearful? I'll never get what that person has. Well, I find that deeper than the word jealousy, personally. And now it's down to four, but boy, are they big. Okay? So that's the resentment form. You fill it out. You might find that you remember a few more resentments as you get onto the 30th page. You add them on. You just do it. You'll find that there's overlap in between selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, frightened. Don't worry about it. You'll find also that as you get on to maybe the 20th page, you will be writing ditto, ditto, ditto. You will be writing, see my brother when you've got your sister down. Really, you will. You write down what bothers you about your mother. Your father may have ditto, ditto, ditto. Who knows? I don't know. But you'll find that it actually flows after the first 15 or 20 pages. It's just so obvious because it's not as if this is unique or specific. It's generic. It's, I'm just like this. There are only four or five ways you can be self-willed. There are only four or five ways you can be dishonest. Only four or five ways you can be self-seeking. Only four or five ways you can be frightened. I will talk about fear in a moment. But once you realize that, And I ask the people who use these forms, am I not right about this? Anyone disagree with me? I mean, you just end up saying, this is exactly the same as this, or this is like this, except with this one little difference. And it's pretty fast. And I've described now the use of this resentment form, and I wager to you, if you did it all at once, which I do not recommend, I recommend time, some thought put into it, maybe 2 weeks instead of, but it wouldn't take you more than 24 hours to do it. Probably take you more like 15 or 10 to do it. So that's not a very long time, but boy, does it show you your character defects. So that's the resentment form. We're on to the fear form. by the way, there's no mention in the big book about putting yourself on that list or making amends to yourself. But when you put down, I'm always going to be lonely as a principle. Selfish, I want to be with someone. Dishonest, my relationship with my higher power ought to be more important than my relationship with individuals. Dishonest, I put people off. I am so afraid of relationships that I do not engage and I don't take risks. I'm throwing this out, I'm not saying that. Self-seeking, I deserve not to be lonely, where there are other people in this world who are lonely too. What am I doing for them, you know? Frightened, I'll always be lonely. And there it is. And there's an analysis that leads you to understand how your wish to be in charge of the world actually is undermining the things that you're looking for in this world. Fear. I won't go into detail about the big book's approach, but the big book says that fear is killing. It's what do they say? Fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. Fear somehow touches on page 67 about every aspect of our lives. It's an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. The images of on a loom, isn't it? Where you shoot the threads. Is that a loom that does that? Yeah. So the image is of this thread, this evil and corroding thread that's in the middle of all this knitting or whatever you call the product of the loom, and it's corroding everything around it. And the big book's approach is this, and the form, the fear form, which is found on page 28 really shows it clearly, more clearly than it is shown here, but it is straight from here. By the way, I do want to say, these are not my forms. These forms were developed by Blaine. Okay? He gave me permission to use them in OA. He's not a very well man, but I was able to tell him a few years ago that these forms have been used by thousands and thousands of people in OA and how grateful they are to him. Please don't think of them as Laurie's forms. They're not. So the big, again, we've got column by column. So the first column is, what am I afraid of? And you might list every person that you've listed on your resentment list, if there's fear involved, there usually is. You might list groups of people. Like, what was it recently? Someone listed 10 friends, asking me for advice, listed 10 friends. And all of the fears were for each one of them, I'm going to be lonely my entire life. I will not have real friends. Well, that person took those 10 fears and put them into one fear. I will be lonely my entire life. You can do that. You know, you can sort of combine things if it makes sense. So all the fears that were shown up in your resentment form in the fourth column are now put into the first column in the fear form. And you write them all down in order. You fill up column one before you fill up column two. Column two then, why do I have this fear? So here's a little bit of analysis. Why do I have a fear of always being alone? Well, I'll never have any comfort, I'll never have any intimacy, I will not be helped, cared for when I'm older, you know, which becomes more of the not so virtuous reasons, right? I mean, when my daughter and a friend of hers, who were both really good-looking kids, went to Europe when they were 19. This was in the days before the internet and before long-distance phone calls being easy. And they went off backpacking. And they went. And our contact with them was maybe every couple of weeks through American Express letters, you know, or something like that. And they went away, and after a couple of weeks, I started to be full of fear. So I worked it out. And what was my fear? Well, I start off with, they'll have days when their tent will leak, or their tent may be torn, may tear down. They may have to spend time in railroad stations overnight. They'll be inconvenienced. They won't have a good time. And then it got to, people will attack them. You know, they will suffer sexual traumas. They will be spirited away in a slave ring. You know, all these. Well, you know, you just begin to build on your fears. Put down, it will happen again for the Holocaust. It can happen again. Yeah. Why do I have the fear? I don't want innocent people to suffer. I don't want suffering in this world. I don't want there to be intolerance in this world. I don't want people to experience the kind of things that other people have continued and continue to experience in this world. That's why I have the fear. I just don't want to live in a world like that. It's just so hard to live in a world like that. Relating to the lawyer who betrayed me, what am I fearful of? That I will always be a patsy. That I will lose the case. That he will never be found out. You know, that he will continue to be revered by other lawyers who don't know how really unethical he is. My friends who suffered sexual abuse, that I will never be able to be intimate, ever. That I will always be damaged by this person. Right? I mean, these are like really deep. And, these are very deep. So you write that in column two. Then the big book gives you two gimmies. Where is my trust and reliance? Upon infinite God or my finite self? I think if I feel fear, I'm not relying on infinite God. And then the thing answers itself. Did self-reliance work? No, because I still have fear. And then, I mean, this is really short, but boy, is it powerful. The big book then says this. Here's the fear prayer. God, please remove my fear and direct and name the fear. Always name the fear. By the way, you may put down fears that weren't on your resentment list. You may be afraid of the dark. You may be afraid of going to a particular part of town. You may be afraid of death, which you don't think about all the time, but when you do think about it, it causes you, you may be afraid of flying or whatever. These are fears you would put down in addition to the fears coming out of the resentment list. Fear of death. Why am I afraid of death? And I put this down, something like, I'm curious about what happens in life, and I don't want to finish the story. I don't want the story to be finished. I don't want to linger. I don't want to cause unhappiness to those who love me. And I'm afraid of pain, right? I'm just giving you an example. You're afraid of going to a particular part of town. I don't want bad things to happen to me. You know, this is a dangerous part of town. Okay, so rely on your infinite God and my finite self. Finite self, did it work? No. Fear prayer. God, please remove my fear, the fear of being of dying, the fear of being going to this part of town, the fear of never having justice for this lawyer, the fear of never being able to be intimate or to be loving, the fear of always being afraid of things, whatever it is. And direct my attention to who you would have me be. Not do, but be. What kind of a person should I be? You may remember this graffito that used to say, to do is to be, Jean-Paul Sartre. To be is to do, Immanuel Kant. Doobie, 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 Sammy Davis Jr. Anyway, it's to be. It's to be, not to do. Because sometimes the person you are to be is a person who does nothing. So you say the prayer, and it may not always come to you. What would my higher power have me be in relation to this fear? And I always suggest to my sponsees that the best way of starting off the thinking is, my higher power will want me to be a person who? And then you fill in the blank. So in relation to my daughter, all the fears I felt in relation to my daughter, what would God have me be, my truth, love, justice, and being, whatever? A person, a loving and compassionate father who makes it clear that he is there for her, whatever he can help. What else can I be in relation to someone who is 3,000 miles away from me and over whom I have, with whom I have almost no contact? What would God have me be in relation to my inability to love and my inability to be intimate? A person who is open to risks. A person who shares love with others, who wants to share love with others. Maybe a person who seeks therapy for the problems. I don't know what comes to you or what will come to you for any particular issues. in relation to Hitler, a person who does what he can to stop or to stop the spread of any hatred and intolerance. Who does what he can, which may mean not very much, but who does what he can. What else can I do? This is the ultimate serenity prayer. You figure out what you can be, and you give up on the rest. And the big book, and thus, in relation to the place I'm afraid to be in, I'm the dangerous place in town, a person who is prudent and takes care of himself, but who doesn't hesitate to help others if they need help. Because if my six-year-old daughter at the time found herself in that place, I'd go there whether it was dangerous or not, right? So, but why should I go to any place that is potentially dangerous if I don't have to, right? So all the answers come in understanding the kind of person you have God would have you be. Sometimes you have to wait and discuss that with your sponsor or with someone in step five in order to get this kind of guidance, but you can work it out. And the big book's promise, right on page 68 in the second last paragraph, last two sentences there, we ask him, God, to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. We become mature. Our fears turn into strategies for life. And that's maturity. We're no longer afraid. We have a sense of direction, what we can and can't do, what we have to accept, and what we don't have to accept. It's as simple as that. It's really powerful. That's fear. Sex conduct. Now, in 1939, Sex did not simply mean physical acts of sex. It meant relationships between people who were attracted to each other, or at least one person who was attracted to another person. And I can prove that by referring you to a book written in 1929, I think, by James Thurber and E.B. White, the great essayists and cartoonists for Thurber, called Is Sex Necessary? It was all about relationships. It wasn't about physical sex. You couldn't write about that in 1929 anyway. So sex conduct has to be looked at as being very broad. And I suggest to people that they think about sex as being an area in which there is an imbalance of attractions, because you're listing people who are where you've hurt them, so where there was some imbalance of attraction. These are among the most difficult relationships, probably parental relationships and sibling relationships and children relationships are more complex, but these are really complex because the body's involved as well as the mind. So they're difficult relationships, and you can include people whom you rejected because of your fears. You can include people with whom you flirt that you shouldn't flirt with. I included a close friend of ours. We have friends who are a couple of friends of ours, and many, many years ago, I used to flirt in front of my wife and my friend with the wife, who was also my friend, and she would flirt with me, and we meant nothing by it. We both loved our spouses. We weren't going to leave for the other person, but somehow there was something wrong, and I put her down. Some of you heard this. I used to be completely in awe of people who looked like Mary Tyler Moore when she was younger, and I finally analyzed it. It's not significant as to why, but at any rate, there were people in my life who looked like her, had the high cheekbones and the sort of pert mouth, the little nose, and very thin, and I couldn't talk to them. I just couldn't. There's something about it. I'm normally the kind of person who can talk. There was one person who was a mother of a daughter who was on the same team as my daughter, and we'd go to practices, and I'd talk to all the other parents. I wouldn't talk to her. So I felt that was hurtful. So I put her down. I didn't put all women who look like Mary Tyler Moore, but when I analyzed it, that was what it was. And so you list people you've harmed. And it's not, and some people use this with relationships in general. You could if you wanted to, but I would suggest you do the minimum that the big book says. You're in a race. Don't do any more than you have to. Just use this to start to analyze your relationship issues with among the more difficult relationship issues where there's some attraction. You may be attracted, have been attracted to someone who wasn't attracted to you. That may have caused all kinds of feelings of rejection. You may have then harmed other people who were attracted to you whom you didn't respond to because of, you got your guards up or something like that. Anyway, you write them down. Column one is that little box above the word selfish in the three boxes there. You see that? That's column one. This form isn't perfect, but it follows Blaine's form, so we copied it. And then they say, where was I selfish, dishonest, and inconsiderate? In many cases, you may already have written that out in the fourth column of the resentment form. There may be people on your resentment form when you realize that, a spouse or an ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend, or whatever. Selfish, same meaning. Dishonest, same meaning. Often, the dishonesty was not getting out of the relationship. Sometimes the dishonesty was not putting enough into the relationship. The selfishness was wanting my pleasure or my sense of what I want out of a relationship and not the other person's. Inconsiderate, self-seeking, it's all about me. I'm thinking about me and not about that other person. Then there's a third column. Did I arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. The flirtation that I was engaged in, I didn't arouse jealousy, no question. I didn't arouse suspicion. Neither my wife nor my good friend would ever have thought that we were doing anything under the table, either literally or figuratively. But bitterness, I wasn't sure. I put down, yes, some bitterness. I thought that there was something that my friend would not like about what I was doing, but knew that since nothing was going on, it was sort of hard to say, stop it, you know? And then the question comes, where was I at fault and what should I have done instead? And notice what you're doing. You're asking yourself, how could I have handled this in an unselfish, honest, and loving and considerate way? And you begin to sort of look at their old relationship and see, well, not necessarily old, it could be your spouse with whom you're still living, as I did with my wife. And generally speaking, what should I have done instead? It comes down from my experience into either got out of the relationship sooner than I did, or invested more into the relationship than I have. Usually it comes down to that, and what a way of living in terms of all relationships. If we're unhappy with any relationship we have with a friend or with an employee or employer, a fellow employee or a colleague, if it's really sick, maybe I have to be honest about the sickness. If it's really unhealthy, maybe I have to end it. If it's really, you know, if it's one I want to continue, maybe I have to put more of myself into it. I mean, who knows what it comes out to? But it comes out really simple. And then you've got a picture of what life would be like if you were unselfish, honest, and considerate of others. And boy, the timing is working out perfect because I'm just going to take 1 minute and then we'll have a break. And that's it for the inventory, the first part of the inventory process, which is to analyze your own defects of character. So now you've got a list of four huge defects of character, which you see in their entirety, how they have affected other people and your life. And you've seen by example and by analysis how you could live a life without fear. You've outgrown your fears already, and how you can live lives in relationships with people that are unselfish, honest, and considerate of others and not self-seeking. And the big book then says on page 70, if we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we've written down a lot. We've listed and analyzed our resentments. It's the last paragraph. We've begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We've commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We've begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. We've listed the people we have hurt by our conduct, are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, we read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. I'd hate to do a sentence diagram of that sentence, but you know what he's talking about. You have blocked off God from you, and this can now be removed by adopting a different life that is more God-directed. The drain can become unplugged. If you have already made a decision, step three, and an inventory of your grosser handicaps. Grosser here doesn't mean yucky, it means big ones. You have made a good beginning. Wonderful OA phrase. That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself. The only promise you've got, you've made a good beginning. There's no great promises at the end of step four, but you can already see the progress that you're making. You're already on the other side. You don't have to make a list of all the good things about you to counteract all the bad things about you. You see where you made mistakes, and you see how you can change those mistakes, at least for the future. And you see what your defects of character are, and you see how you can live without those defects of character. And those of you who have done it, and I tell you on a personal level, because I do this a lot, I have never found a better way of coming to conclusions about what to do in my life or how to live my life or how to deal with all the things that are killing me than this method that I've just gone through. And it's absolutely amazing. And it makes you so ready to talk to another human being in step five and to have God remove all your defects of character in step six and seven. Absolutely ready. But you begin to realize the only way to remove them is to make amends, to become a different person in steps eight and nine. So we'll pick that up after the break, which will end at five after three. Okay? Five after four, sorry.